Chapter 15. Perhaps our example will open the pass on this side. No, we shall not be followed, returned Abenrezer, looking up at the sky and back at the valley. We shall be alone up yonder. On the mountain, the road was fair enough for stout walkers, and the air grew lighter and easier to breathe as the two ascended. But the settled gloom remained as it had remained for days back. Nature seemed to have come to a pause. The sense of hearing, no less than the sense of sight, was troubled by having to wait so long for the change, whatever it might be, that impended. The silence was as palpable and heavy as the lowering clouds, or rather cloud, for there seemed to be but one in all the sky, and that one covering the whole of it. Although the light was thus dismally shrouded, the prospect was not obscured. Down in the valley of the Rhone behind them, the stream could be traced through all its many windings, oppressively somber and solemn in its one leaden hue, a colorless waste. Far and high above them, glaciers and suspended avalanches overhung the spots where they must pass. By and by, deep and dark below them on their right, were awful precipice and roaring torrent. Tremendous mountains arose in every vista. The gigantic landscape, uncheered by a touch of changing light, or a solitary ray of sun, was yet terribly distinct in its ferocity. The hearts of two lonely men might shrink a little if they had to win their way for miles and hours among a legion of silent and motionless men, mere men like themselves, all looking at them with fixed and frowning front. But how much more, when the legion is of nature's mightiest works, and the frown may turn to fury in an instant. As they ascended, the road became gradually more rugged and difficult. But the spirits of Vendale rose as they mounted higher, leaving so much more of the road behind them conquered. Abenrezer spoke little, and held on with a determined purpose. Both, in respect of agility and endurance, were well qualified for the expedition. Whatever the born mountaineer read in the weather tokens that was illegible to the other, he kept to himself. "Shall we get across today?" asked Vendale. "No," replied the other. "You see how much deeper the snow lies here than it lay half a league lower. The higher we mount, the deeper the snow will lie. Walking is half waiting even now. And the days are so short. If we get as high as the fifth refuge, and lie the night at the hospice, we shall do well." "Is there no danger of the weather rising in the night?" asked Vendale, anxiously, "and snowing us up?" "There is danger enough about us," said Abenrezer, with a cautious glance onward and upward, "to render silence our best policy. You have heard of the Bridge of the Ganther?" "I have crossed it once." "In the summer?" "Yes, in the traveling season." "Yes, but it is another thing at this season," with a sneer, as though he were out of temper. "This is not a time of year, or a state of things, on an alpine pass, that you gentlemen holiday travelers know much about." "You are my guide," said Vendale, good-humoredly. "I trust to you." "I am your guide," said Abenrezer, "and I will guide you to your journey's end. There is the bridge before us." They had made a turn into a desolate and dismal ravine, where the snow lay deep below them, deep above them, deep on every side. While speaking, Abenrezer stood pointing at the bridge, and observing Vendale's face, with a very singular expression on his own. "If I, as guide, had sent you over there, in advance, and encouraged you to give a shout or two, you might have brought down upon yourself tons and tons and tons of snow, that would not only have struck you dead, but buried you deep, at a blow." "No doubt," said Vendale. "No doubt. But that is not what I have to do, as guide. So pass silently. Or, going as we go, our indiscretion might else crush and bury me. Let us get on." There was a great accumulation of snow on the bridge, and such enormous accumulations of snow overhung them from protecting masses of rock, that they might have been making their way through a stormy sky of white clouds. Using his staff skillfully, sounding as he went, and looking upward, with bent shoulders, as it were to resist the mere idea of a fall from above, Abenrezer softly led. Vendale closely followed. They were yet in the midst of their dangerous way, when there came a mighty rush, followed by a sound as of thunder. Abenrezer clapped his hand on Vendale's mouth, and pointed to the track behind them. Its aspect had been wholly changed in a moment. An avalanche had swept over it, and plunged into the torrent at the bottom of the gulf below. Their appearance at the solitary inn not far beyond this terrible bridge elicited many expressions of astonishment from the people shut up in the house. "We stay but to rest," said Abenrezer, shaking the snow from his dress at the fire. "This gentleman has very pressing occasion to get across. Tell him, Vendale." "Assuredly, I have very pressing occasion. I must cross. You hear, all of you. My friend has very pressing occasion to get across, and we want no advice and no help. I am as good a guide, my fellow countrymen, as any of you. Now, give us to eat and drink." In exactly the same way, and in nearly the same words, when it was coming on dark, and they had struggled through the greatly increased difficulties of the road, and had at last reached their destination for the night, Abenrezer said to the astonished people of the hospice, gathering about them at the fire, while they were yet in the act of getting their wet shoes off, and shaking the snow from their clothes, "It is well to understand one another, friends all. This gentleman has," said Vendale, readily taking him up with a smile, "very pressing occasion to get across. Must cross. You hear? Has very pressing occasion to get across. Must cross. We want no advice and no help. I am mountain-born, and act as guide. Do not worry us by talking about it, but let us have supper, and wine, and bed." All through the intense cold of the night, the same awful stillness. Again at sunrise, no sunny tinge to gild or redden the snow. The same interminable waste of deathly white, the same immovable air, the same monotonous gloom in the sky. "Travelers!" A friendly voice called to them from the door, after they were afoot, knapsack on back and staff in hand, as yesterday. "Recollect! There are 5 places of shelter, near together, on the dangerous road before you. And there is the wooden cross, and there is the next hospice. Do not stray from the track. If the turman comes on, take shelter instantly." "The trade of these poor devils," said Abenrezer to his friend, with a contemptuous backward wave of his hand towards the voice. "How they stick to their trade. You Englishmen say we Swiss are mercenary. Truly, it does look like it." They had divided between the 2 knapsacks such refreshments as they had been able to obtain that morning, and as they deemed it prudent to take. Abenrezer carried the wine as his share of the burden, Vendale, the bread and meat and cheese, and the flask of brandy. They had for some time labored upward and onward through the snow which was now above their knees in the track, and of unknown depth elsewhere, and they were still laboring upward and onward through the most frightful part of that tremendous desolation, when snow began to fall. At first, but a few flakes descended slowly and steadily. After a little while the fall grew much denser, and suddenly it began without apparent cause to whirl itself in 2 spiral shapes. Instantly ensuing upon this last change, an icy blast came roaring at them, and every sound and force imprisoned until now was let loose. One of the dismal galleries through which the road is carried at that perilous point, a cave eked out by arches of great strength, was near at hand. They struggled into it, and the storm raged wildly. The noise of the wind, the noise of the water, the thundering down of displaced masses of rock and snow, the awful voices with which, not only that gorge, but every gorge in the whole monstrous range seemed to be suddenly endowed, the darkness as of night, the violent revolving of the snow which beat, and broke it into spray and blinded them, the madness of everything around insatiate for destruction, the rapid substitution of furious violence for unnatural calm, and hosts of appalling sounds for silence. These were things, on the edge of a deep abyss, to chill the blood, though the fierce wind, made actually solid by ice and snow, had failed to chill it. A Benrezer, walking to and fro in the gallery without ceasing, signed to Vendale to help him unbuckle his knapsack. They could see each other, but could not have heard each other speak. Vendale complying, a Benrezer produced his bottle of wine, and poured some out, motioning Vendale to take that for warmth's sake, and not brandy. Vendale again complying, a Benrezer seemed to drink after him, and the two walked backwards and forwards side by side, both well knowing that to rest or sleep would be to die. The snow came driving heavily into the gallery by the upper end at which they would pass out of it, if they ever passed out, for greater dangers lay on the road behind them than before. The snow soon began to choke the arch. An hour more, and it lay so high as to block out half the returning daylight. But it froze hard now, as it fell, and could be clambered through or over. The violence of the mountain storm was gradually yielding to steady snowfall. The wind still raged at intervals, but not incessantly, and when it paused, the snow fell in heavy flakes. They might have been 2 hours in their frightful prison, when a Benrezer, now crunching into the mound, now creeping over it with his head bowed down, and his body touching the top of the arch, made his way out. Vendale followed close upon him, but followed without clear motive or calculation. For the lethargy of Basil was creeping over him again, and mastering his senses. How far he had followed out of the gallery, or with what obstacles he had since contended, he knew not. He became roused to the knowledge that a Benrezer had set upon him, and that they were struggling desperately in the snow. He became roused to the remembrance of what his assailant carried in a girdle. He felt for it, drew it, struck at him, struggled again, struck at him again, cast him off, and stood face to face with him. I promised to guide you to your journey's end, said a Benrezer, and I have kept my promise. The journey of your life ends here. Nothing can prolong it. You are sleeping as you stand. You are a villain. What have you done to me? You are a fool. I have drugged you. You are doubly a fool, for I drugged you once before upon the journey, to try you. You are trebly a fool, for I am the thief and forger, and in a few moments I shall take those proofs against the thief and forger from your insensible body. The entrapped man tried to throw off the lethargy, but its fatal hold upon him was so sure that, even while he heard those words, he stupidly wondered which of them had been wounded, and whose blood it was that he saw sprinkled on the snow. What have I done to you, he asked, heavily and thickly, that you should be so base a murderer? Done to me? You would have destroyed me, but that you have come to your journey's end. Your cursed activity interposed between me, and the time I had counted on in which I might have replaced the money. Done to me? You have come in my way not once, not twice, but again and again and again. Did I try to shake you off in the beginning, or no? You were not to be shaken off. Therefore you die here. Vendale tried to think coherently, tried to speak coherently, tried to pick up the iron-shod staff he had let fall, failing to touch it, tried to stagger on without its aid. All in vain, all in vain. He stumbled, and fell heavily forward on the brink of the deep chasm. Stupefied, dozing, unable to stand upon his feet, a veil before his eyes, his sense of hearing deadened, he made such a vigorous rally that, supporting himself on his hands, he saw his enemy standing calmly over him, and heard him speak. You call me murderer, said a Benrezer, with a grim laugh. The name matters very little. But at least I have set my life against yours, for I am surrounded by dangers, and may never make my way out of this place. The tumult is rising again. The snow is on the whirl. I must have the papers now. Every moment has my life in it. Stop! Cried Vendale, in a terrible voice, staggering up with the last flash of fire breaking out of him, and clutching the thievish hands at his breast, in both of his. Stop! Stand away from me. God bless my Marguerite. Happily she will never know how I died. Stand off from me, and let me look at your murderous face. Let it remind me of something left to say. the sight of him fighting, so hard for his senses, and the doubt, whether he might not for the instant be possessed by the strength of a dozen men, kept his opponent still. Wildly glaring at him, Vendale faltered out the broken words. It shall not be the trust of the dead betrayed by me reputed parents' misinherited fortune, see to it. As his head dropped on his breast, and he stumbled on the brink of the chasm as before, the thievish hands went once more, quick and busy, to his breast. He made a convulsive attempt to cry no, desperately rolled himself over into the gulf, and sank away from his enemy's touch, like a phantom in a dreadful dream. The mountain storm raged again, and passed again. The awful mountain voices died away, the moon rose, and the soft and silent snow fell. Two men and two large dogs came out at the door of the hospice. The men looked carefully around them, and up at the sky. The dogs rolled in the snow, and took it into their mouths, and cast it up with their paws. One of the men said to the other, "We may venture now. We may find them in one of the five refuges." Each fastened on his back a basket, each took in his hand a strong spiked pole, each girded under his arms a looped end of a stout rope, so that they were tied together. Suddenly the dogs desisted from their gambols in the snow, stood looking down the ascent, put their noses up, put their noses down, became greatly excited, and broke into a deep loud bay together. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.